Okay, we're on Daf Lamed Amid Aleph, second wide lines. We had one brisa. If people testified the father hid money, and he said it belonged to Meiser Sheni or other things like that. So we said it depends where he saw that. Was that outside or inside? If it was outside, we believe him because he could have stole it. If it was inside, then we don't believe him. And guess what? Okay, we got it back. Next case of the brisa. Next case, same thing. The witnesses are telling the heirs a little bit of a different story now. The Omar Shel Ploni Hain. Instead of saying that they belonged to, they were Meiser Sheni or something like that. That was the case before. Interesting, though, the first price says, Shel Ploni Hain, Shel Meiser Sheni Hain. Now it says, and he said to them that the money belongs to so-and-so. How is that any different? Shel Meiser Sheni Hain. Or if it belongs to my Shani, but now we're going to give a different qualification. Unable to download. What's going on? Im kemoser. If it seems like he's giving instructions to them, in other words, he said it. One second. What's going on over here? So if he stated it in a manner that indicated to them that he intended this to be a testament concerning monies to be distributed to their rightful owners after his death, if it felt like he was giving that, they were saying it over in that way, Dvarav Kayam, their words stand, and we take it at face value, that's what he meant. In other words, if they felt that it really was instructions he was saying, okay.
They give these instructions to a third party.
The third party is hearing it. Yeah, yes, that's what the third party is saying. But in Kamarin, but if it seemed that he was deceiving them, in other words, if his statement gave the appearance of an attempt to deceive them into thinking the money was not his, so they would not help themselves to it, or so that they should not begin to spend money liberally on the basis of his wealth. In other words, if you feel when the father said it, he's trying to minimize their wealth, then lo amar klum. Then this statement is discounted, the kids can keep it. Okay, so that's a hard thing to determine, in
yes,
other words.
Exactly.
They'd have to ask the witnesses certain questions. What do you think he meant when he said that? All right, next point, third case, where the guys are testifying about the father who hid the money. In case... one was troubled regarding whereabouts of money that his father left him. Here's another case now. The guy doesn't know where the money is. The kid said, I know my father left me money. I don't know where it is. Uba bal chalom. And now a master of dreams comes to him. Okay, in other words, the heir had a dream. Yeah. In other words, the heirs had a dream. So that the master of dreams is the angel appointed to bring people dreams at night. So the heirs had a dream and said to the heir, Kach v'kach hein, this is such and such money, is b'mokam ploni hein, it's in such and such place. But then also in the dream it says, Shel Meiser Sheni hein, they belong to Meiser Sheni. Okay, what do you do then? But the heir says, now I don't know why the heir would say this. Guess he wants to be very frum. He's saying, I don't know where my father put it. In a dream he told me he put it, but it belongs to Meiser Sheni. Well, guess what? There was such a story that actually happened. Va'amran, the rabbi said, Divrei chalomos lo malin v'lo mordin. A dream does not make things go up or not down, meaning the contents are irrelevant. You don't have to treat it as Meiser Sheni. Right now, even though some of the details may be true, the guy went and found exactly that much money buried under such and such place. See, I figure, well, if that was true, must be when my father said belonged to Meiser Sheni, must also be true. So you know, because we have a rule about dreams that there's always something in a dream that's not true, and more than that, it's like we don't paskin shilas by dreams. right? You don't render laws by dreams. So if the dream helped you out, you happen to find money, that's one thing. But for you to take money away from you, you don't do that based on a dream. You know, what if you have a dream and in your dream somebody says you have to pay them money? You owe me money. So you don't have to, you know, you could ask the guy, but, you know, that has no halachic bearing. So that's that third case where, although the dream helped him out, but we don't have to follow the dream totally. Okay, next, that's the end of this little topic. We go now to the next statement of the Mishnah. What was the next statement of the Mishnah? Shnaim Omrim Zakai. If two judges say he's not liable, and one says he's liable, then he's not liable. The verdict is then announced anonymously. That's what the Mishnah said. Now we're going to see a machlokas, a potential machlokas in all this. So now the question is, okay, if that's the case, now how do you write the document? The judges have to now write, you know, this case came to us, and we rule that this guy has to pay this guy, or this guy doesn't pay this guy, whatever.
So it's question. Only two judges
in this case. No, three. Judges. Now we're talking about three. Two voted innocent, one voted guilty.
Yeah, okay, fine.
The voting is over. Back to the court. Back to a regular case. Question is, michtav, the writing, hechi kosvi, how did they write it? Mean to say, is there confidentiality of the individual opinions or not? Now, ordinarily, the verdict is handed down orally as described in the Mishnah. However, the losing litigant is entitled in certain instances to a written record of verdict. The Gemara deals with the proper wording of a written verdict issued in such an instance. At certain times, the loser's entitled to have, I'd like you to put it down on paper. So how do they write it? So we have a machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan says like this. This is what they write. Zakai. They say so-and-so is not liable. They just say this, you know, and signed by all three members of the court. The case was brought to us on this day, and we ruled the following. So-and-so is not liable to pay you, period. That's all they write. That's Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish Amar, nope. Ploni uploni mezakin. So-and-so and so-and-so find the defendant not liable, or it could be so-and-so and so-and-so find the defendant liable. It's either Ploni uploni mezakin or Ploni uploni mechayvin. The names of the judges responsible for the verdict are written down. Okay, so but they don't mention the guy who didn't vote. Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Based on these two rabbis, you pay. Based on these two rabbis, you know, obviously it was not a unanimous vote. If it would be a unanimous vote, then they write all three. That's opinion number two. That's Rabbi Yochanan ben...
That's Reish Lakish.
I'm sorry, Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish. Third opinion, Rabbi Elazar says... Midivrehem niske ploni. They write through the words of the judges, so and so was found not liable. Now, what is that saying? That's an interesting mix. Because when you say through the words of the judges, he is not liable, it means it was a divided court.
Could be.
It says from the words. Okay, because you could have just said not liable. Just say not liable.
So,
don't you know, why do you have to say through the words of the judges? Why do you have to say through the words of the judges? Let's say not liable. All right. So now Gemara wants to know, my Benayhu, what's the logic in the three opinions? What are they arguing about? So, Ika Beinayhu, the different one answers, number of answers given. And answer number one says, the difference is, Lishalume Ihu Minosa Badaisu. In the case where the majority ruled incorrectly, what happens when the majority rules incorrectly? They said, either whatever way, they're causing one guy to lose. Then we find out later the judges made a mistake. Later evidence comes over, they made a mistake. And the guy who had to pay or didn't have to pay, whatever it was, he left the country. So we can't go back to the guy who owes them the money. So the court, now, obviously, they made a mistake. we bring back the litigant and say, well, we made a mistake, you now have to pay, or pay him back, or whatever. But we're talking about, let's say, the guy had left the country. So now, the judges were responsible for him losing the money. So now, the judges got to make it up. Question is, who? It was 2-1. So that's the idea. Whether the dissenting judge... Now, clearly, the two judges who said he had to pay... who are wrong, they should pay. But what about the dissenting judge? Now, let's see. A court that issued an incorrect ruling is sometimes required to reimburse the litigant whom they wronged. We'll see that a few pages from now. So in a case where they would have to pay, would the dissenting judge have to pay or not? So now let's go over all three opinions and see how it fits according to all three opinions. Dileman de Omar Zakai Mashalim, if the wording is... he's not liable. The Laman Domer Zakai, the one who says all we write is he's not liable, then Mishalim, the dissenting judge, pays a share. So we don't, so there, and therefore there's no reason to mention his dissenting opinion. You say, we said he paid because the rule is all the judges pay. Okay? Since the verdict could not have been issued had the court not had three members, even the dissenting judge bears responsibility for the verdict, for his participation empowered the court to issue its ruling. He's therefore required to share the cost of restitution with the other judges whose majority opinion the verdict reflects. In other words, remember, what if he would have not offered an opinion?
But he did.
Well, let's say he said, I'm leaving the court. You guys are so wrong. I want nothing to do with you guys. And now they can't do the judgment. They can't do the judgment. So he was willing to go along with the majority opinion. So since he was willing to go along with the majority opinion, he is part of the final decision, right? If you really think they're wrong, then say, I'm leaving. You guys are so nuts, I'm out of here, right? And I don't want to be part of this, this mistaken judgment. So you were part of it, and you can't judge with two. You can't judge. You have to have three. So that's why they just say guilty. And that means, you know, it came from all three of us. We, you know, you don't know any different, and everybody has to pay. Ulaman, Damar, Ploni, Ploni, Mizakim, Ploni, Ploni, Machayim. The one who says so and so said innocent, and so and so says guilty. Then the third guy, Lo Mishalim, doesn't have to pay because the verdict was worded to reflect his dissent. So now, should the verdict be declared incorrect by a more prominent court, the written verdict will indicate the dissenting judge is free from sharing the cost of restitution. Okay? Rabbi Lazar, who ruled that the verdict is read through their words, so now the Gemara is not explaining the third opinion, only explained two. So now the commentary has to fill in, well, what about the third opinion? Rabbi Lazar said, through their words, so-and-so was found not liable, agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that the dissenting judge is required to pay a share of the restitution. Therefore, then, it's not made clear in the written verdict. Nevertheless, some allusion to a dissenting opinion is made to avoid conveying the false notion that the ruling was unanimous. In other words, the first opinion says guilt, not guilty. From that, the guy could think it was unanimous. Yeah. Even though it wasn't. The second opinion says we spell out who the names are so that the dissenting opinion doesn't have to pay. The third one, who said there was a discussion, okay, but still all three names are found, so he would still have to pay. So that's what a possible answer number one is. However, the Gemara will reject this. Why will the Gemara reject this? Ulaman da'omer zakei mishalim, but according to one who says that the one who says not liable pays, that was the first and third opinion. According to that, who says he pays, listen, why should he pay? Lay malaho, let him tell the other judges, had you listened to me, atunami lo shumi, you wouldn't even have to have paid. So it's illogical to have his mere participation in court make him liable since he contested the incorrect verdict. So why should he pay? Therefore, out. This is not the bachlokes, and it would seem from this question, and the way the Gemara doesn't go further on this point, is that the dissenting judge does not pay. That's out. So now we have to go back. So why? What's the machlokas of how they write the document? Ela ikabe nayu, But you could say this is the difference. L'shalomeinu menasa didei. Where the two judges who erred are required to pay the wronged litigant the dissenting judge's share of the restitution. In other words, let's say they say, let's make it, they say the guy owed $300. So now the question is, they found they were wrong. So now the question is, how much do they got to pay the wronged litigant?
$150
each. Well, the litigant needs to get $300 back, yeah. Right? But maybe they'll say, well, it was 300, three judges, every judge is responsible for 100, so we're only paying 200, and the guy who said you were supposed to get the money, he doesn't have to pay you. So would they have to pay the guy the full 300 or only 200? That will be the discussion. In other words, does the dissenting judge's freedom from... We know that the dissenting judge doesn't have to pay. But the fact is, hey, does that increase the obligation of what the two judges should pay or not? That's the question. Well, hold on. I hear what you're saying. So do the two judges have to pay the dissenting judge's share? Lamanda Mazakai, the one who says all we said was innocent, then Mishalmi, then they even have to pay the share of the dissenting ones. Lamandam or Ploni, Oploni, Mizak, and Oploni, Ploni, Mechaivim. But the one who says we write down this so and so said innocent, and only this one said not innocent, guilty. Lo Mishamim, they don't have to pay their share. They reimburse only the two thirds and not the whole thing. Therefore, the written verdict makes note of the dissenting opinion to indicate that the court is not liable for full reimbursements in case the ruling is overturned. The reasons that the judges who erred are not fully liable will emerge shortly.
What's the reason for that?
That's what he says. Will emerge shortly. Will emerge shortly. So now, but let's look at that first opinion. The first opinion says that the guy who was wrong, who was correct, but was in the minority, he has to pay. Well, they pay for everything. Ulaman de Omer Zakai Mishami. But according to the one who said, that he, the one who says is not liable, so do you say that they have to pay that guy's share? The limrule, let them tell the dissenting judge, ilav at badan, had you not been with us, lav is solik dini midi, there'd be no judgment rendered at all. Yeah. So why should we bear the full burden for a verdict which could not have issued by ourselves? The judge's requirement to reimburse the wrong litigant stems from the law of torts. Since they caused him a monetary loss by issuing incorrect ruling, they are liable for his loss. Where the two judges and majority cannot be considered to have caused the loss by themselves, since a court of two is not empowered to adjudicate. It's only by virtue of the third judge's participation the ruling was issued and the loss inflicted. Therefore, they're not liable for the entire loss. The dissenting judge cannot be liable for share of damage since he opposed the ruling. Therefore, the two judges who won the majority each pay one-third of the loss, and the litigant must observe one-third. So therefore, we say that, so we can't say, say they pay the full thing, doesn't make sense, because they can say, listen, if it wasn't for him, we were only two-thirds responsible for that. So that one goes out. Okay, so that's not what the machlokas is. So we now have concluded that they only would pay two-thirds. You see, even though this is not the machlokas, you see what we're concluding. The minority one who said he was obliged doesn't have to pay. The two who said he had to pay, they only have to pay two-thirds. But we still don't know what their where they are arguing. So Ela Ika Beinai, you could say this is the final answer now. Mishum lo selech rochel ba'amecha. We're worried about the prohibition of gossip mongering. In other words, by the way you write the ruling, are we concerned for gossip or not? Rabbi Yochanan says we just give a blanket statement, Zakai, it's been ruled that he's innocent. Why? Mishum lo telech rochel. Because we don't want to violate, don't be a gossip monger. Why? Because nobody knows which judge said guilty or innocent. So therefore, you're keeping confidentiality. In other words, the loser can't say, oh, you judges are rotten, and as opposed to the next opinion, because we don't know who said what. Reish Lakish Amar, Rabbi Yochanan, who says, Ploni, Ploni, Mizak, and Ploni, Vechayom, they say, this one said guilty, this one said innocent. Because why? Because if you're going to write it straight, that we said guilty, mishum demichzik hashikra, it looks like they're lying. Because it appears that the rule was, if you just say innocent, it appears it was undisputed. And if it really was a dispute, you got to write the dispute. In other words, the prohibition against gossip, Margaret, according to Rishakas, does not apply in this instance. Why? It is applicable only to a judge who approaches a litigant privately and attempts to curry favor them by revealing that the other judges were responsible for the verdict. Where the official verdict makes the matter public, it's not considered gossip mongering. Therefore, lest the verdict convey a falsehood, we make known the individual opinions. In other words, the question is, a judge can't go over to another guy and say, no, I really voted for you. That would be gossip mongering. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you just write, this is the verdict, these two said innocent, this one said guilty, that's not gossip. The first opinion says that is gossip mongering. The second rabbi says it's not. And since it's not, why should we lie and give a false impression that everybody said he was innocent? Now we're going to at least get all three opinions for the first time expressed. First two ways, we expressed them and clumping two opinions together. First and third always went together. Now we're saying all three have a different svar. First one says, gossip mongering, get it out. Second one says, that's not gossip mongering, to tell the truth. The third one says, from our words, you're guilty. Rabbi Elazar says, Eisle Damara, Eisle Damara. He holds a little bit of both opinions. He was concerned for gossip mongering and was concerned to not lie. So therefore, what did he do? Hilkach, therefore, we say, Kasva, you write like this. Midivrayim, from their words, Niskeploni. This guy is innocent, which means to say it was a split decision, but we're not telling you where the split was. Now that you hear what's going on? The first opinion said, just say innocent. Finished. And therefore it is no gossip mongering. But the other opinion said, well, that's a lie. So tell the names. Too bad. The other guy said, wait a minute. Third opinion says, I can have the best of both worlds. Just write a statement that indicates it was a split decision, but you don't have to say who the split decision was. And that's how we paskin.
Even if it's a...
That doesn't solve the issue of who's going to pay in case the pizza's wrong.
Oh. Well, then I guess the next court would have to go and find out who were the ones that said it. They'd have to find out.
So then we're back to the...
Okay, so how it would be more difficult for them to find it out. But they could eventually find it out. If the judges remember. You're right.
Yeah, we didn't solve the issue of who's going to pay him back in case they're wrong.
Well, no, we did. It's the two judges who made the wrong decision.
That's not...
No, we said that already. We've gone through that. We're saying it's the two judges and they pay two-thirds.
That's
what's going to be. The question is, how are you going to find out who the two judges are? It wasn't written on the document. So it would take a little bit more effort. They'd have to go back. Right? I mean, obviously, it only helps if these judges are alive. If they die, no one's got to pay anyway. So it's if these judges are alive. They'd probably have to write privately. They'd have to probably have private ledgers who said what the rulings were.
So the litigant is a loser one way or the other.
If it was a 2-1 decision, if it was a unanimous decision, he won't lose anything.
He
won't lose anything. Okay, that's the issues. Yeah, what? Yeah?
How do they know? Who determines that the judgment was wrong?
It goes to a higher court.
It's got to go on appeal to a higher court.
Yeah,
that's what I said. It goes to a higher court and it's overruled. And then if the winner isn't around.
Right.
If the winner's around, you just make the winner pay the $300. Obviously, what do you say? Well, can you imagine, the guy who wins, he's sitting pretty, he's in town where everybody says, oh, judges, you'll have to pay. No, obviously the guy who was exonerated would have to pay.
Yeah.
The only time the judges have to pay is if they was exonerated, skip town.
Yeah,
or has lost all his assets and there's no money to pay.
But if the judgment was that you're liable, it's the first one, the first case, you're liable.
So same.
Why would it go to a higher court?
Because the loser, the loser took it to a higher court.
Yeah, but it seems like it's unanimous.
No.
You're liable.
It doesn't matter. Wait. Even if it's unanimous, you have the right to say, I disagree with the court, I'm going to a higher court. You can appeal. So if there's an appeal, Then, if it's reversed, the judges have to take responsibility to pay if the other litigant's not there to pay back. Okay.
Also, would we follow Rabbi Elazar's statement for the verdict, even if the case was unanimous? Would we say, like, oh, through their words?
I don't know. Because we're only speaking about was two to one.
Okay.
It would, you know, it would make, well, I don't know, because if it's unanimous, it's unanimous.
If it's unanimous, then there's no need for dispute.
Then it's like, what are you disputing? Everybody said you had to pay.
Yeah. There's no dispute.
You're going to get mad at everybody? Yeah. I mean, if all said you have to pay, you probably have to pay. When it's 2-1, the guy could get upset. He says, wait a minute, split decision, what's going on over here? But if it's unanimous, you'd think that the guy would say, okay, it was unanimous. I guess, you know, everybody disagreed with me. Okay, let's move on to the next part of the next Mishnah. So now, the next statement's a little bit not, the Mishnah isn't even clear, and the Gemara is a little bit not sure what's going on. Gomeres HaDavar, let's say the judge is now finished. They did their deliberations. They've come to a decision. So Hayu Machnisin, then they would bring them back in to hear the decision. Now the question is, the Mishnah doesn't say bring them back. Who's them? In other words, when the judges are ready to make their decision, we bring the others back. Who are the others that we bring back? So, Laman, who are we talking about? Whom did they bring back in? Ilay Malabala did, and if you want to say it's the litigants themselves that brought in, but Hasam Kaimi, but they'd been present throughout the entire proceedings. They never were told to leave. Now we got to understand what's going on. What do you mean they never told to leave? Aren't they going to overhear what the judges were saying if they're never told to leave? So, look at the commentary. The Mishnah did not mention the litigants are sent from the courtroom after stating their cases. Apparently, then they remained in the courtroom throughout the proceedings. This argument presents an obvious difficulty. Since the Mishnah forbids the judge from disclosing their individual opinions, is it not evident the litigants were not present during the deliberations? Ron explains that since the Mishnah does not explicitly mention the litigants were sent from the courtroom, the Gemara assumes that they were merely removed to a far corner of the room to prevent them from hearing the deliberations. It's a big room. So they say, okay, we heard your case. Now go sit down over there. The judges are up at the front by the bench.
Right?
So it's a big room. There's chairs all over it. It says, okay, two litigants, come up here to the bench. Present your case. Witnesses, this, that. Fine. Okay, now go sit down. And now the three of them huddle together, and they whisper, you know, they don't talk loud, and they talk it over.
What's the difference between that and not sending them out of the room altogether? I don't understand.
Well, I don't know why, but that's what the Gemara is saying. So in other words, so they were there the whole time. So it's not the litigants. They were there the whole time. So now it must be who's left. Who's left to bring in? Elalei. I guess it's just the witnesses. They were brought in, but now here's the point. The witnesses testified. Once the witnesses testified, they don't need to stay there.
They can leave, yeah. Well,
yes, they can leave.
Once they
well, what do you need them there for? The litigants have to stay because they have to know what the verdict is.
Right.
But let's be honest, do the witnesses need to remain after they said their testimony? Well, that's a machlokas. That is a machlokas. Now let's look at it simply. Remember, how did they question the witnesses? One at a time. So, you question witness. You got to remember, there's a lot of things going on here. The witnesses are also busy people. The guy was a farmer. He's taking off time from working on the farm. So you're going to waste all his time? So think about it. Okay, come into the court, give us your testimony, you go home. You know, I mean, the judges have to ask all the questions they're going to ask. You don't come back and ask a second, we know we didn't ask you enough questions. No, ask. It's unusual. So go away. Now the question is, the only possibility is to say we bring back the witnesses.
For what purpose?
Ah, that we're going to see in a minute. So as the Mishnah teaches, each witness was sent from the courtroom while the other was examined in order to prevent them from coordinating any false testimony. They are now brought back into the courtroom together before the verdict is issued. Here's why. and asked to repeat their testimony together. Now they could say it together. This is necessary because a ruling cannot be issued on the basis of the testimony of two witnesses unless both testify together. That's according to one opinion. All right, so he say, in other words, you have one, you have one. Okay, now we know we have, you know.
They're not going to change their testimony. I don't see the purpose.
Well, but yet, but the Torah says, based on two witnesses, the law stands. So the question is, do the two witnesses, here's the problem. Torah says you have to have two witnesses. So they have to come together because we know that they both were there. But on the other hand, they can't give us the testimony together because then maybe they were making shtick. So we have to go through a two-step process. Each one comes alone, and then the two of them, before we make the final verdict, I want to hear both of you say the testimony again, and now that we're, now could be they threw out the testimony.
Yeah.
They could take one guy, you're a liar, get out of here.
Yeah.
Or by after hearing the two of them, they say, well, you're both out of here. But if they're both happy with both of them, so really when they're investigating the witnesses, what they're doing is they're vetting them for their honesty. And then they both come back and actually testify. And then the ruling is made on their testimony.
So the ruling hasn't been...
They've decided, in other words, they listen to one witness. They ask everything they do.
Right.
Then they ask the other witness.
Right.
Now they sit down and say, okay, what's going on over here? So they may right away say, you know what? These two witnesses were liars. Forget it. The case is out. We throw it out. We're going to tell them, case out. That's one way. Or they say, no, the witnesses really did seem to tell the truth. And based on what they're saying, this is how we should rule.
Right.
Remember, they only really can make the judgment based on what the witnesses say.
Right.
So now if they say the witnesses were right, so now we're going to want to bring the witnesses back, hear what they're saying.
Just to satisfy the Torah's requirement.
Yeah, because Torah says you have to have two witnesses.
Yeah, okay.
Now that's going to be a machlokas. We're going to see now. Okay, but anyway, it appears. But that would be the only logical reason to ask them to come.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to stop it here because Gemara is now going to start asking questions on this. So, best, you know, we'll go back tomorrow. We'll just quickly review this last part.